Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium, a 40k podcast from sunny England. My name is Dan.
And I'm Steve.
Join us as we explore the 41st millennium in all its glory, as we talk narrative gaming, Warhammer lore, and awesome hobby. From the grim dark corners of Imperial hives,
to the outer reaches of Xenos infested space.
Welcome to the Ashes of the Imperium.
Hello and welcome to episode 61 of Ashes of the Imperium. My name is Dan, and as ever, I'm joined by the illustrious Steve Foote. How are you, Steve?
I'm very good. Very good. Ready for Christmas?
Oh, yes. It is fast approaching. We are recording this on Thursday, the 17th of December, and you'll be listening to this whilst wrapping presents. Very exciting.
As long as I don't make too many mistakes and the editing takes forever, Dan, eh?
No comment, Steve. No comment whatsoever.
So what are we doing today?
We are recommencing the Flashpoint series. So this is part two of our Flashpoint series. And Flashpoints, for those of you who have been living under a rock for the past few months, or indeed episodes, Flashpoints are collections of articles that explore a particular region or a war zone at a specific point in time. Flashpoints contain new rules for you to try out on the battlefield, plus new stories and background about the setting, giving you plenty of opportunities to theme your games. You could recreate some of the battles mentioned in the background section, convert characters based on the heroes and stories, or build a new battlefield to represent one of the theatres of war. Flashpoints span multiple issues and articles and are always marked with the Flashpoint symbol, making them easy to find in your copy of White Dwarf. I did find mine very easy. Thankfully to the convenient Flashpoint symbol.
Yes.
But yes, we've got a new article to cover, and we've even got White Dwarf. Let's have a look. Dwarf 458. We've also got White Dwarf 459 in our hands as well. So there will be another episode, probably released on Boxing Day, I want to say, that kind of time. Ooh. Where we'll be covering some of the new rules in the next copy of White Dwarf, so Flashpoint Episode 3.
Yep.
So something to listen to whilst you're unwrapping your Christmas Warhammer presents. Steve, are you hoping to get anything for Christmas that's Warhammer related?
Yes. Hoping to get a Baneblade to do another conversion.
Excellent. Have you been a good boy this year?
Don't know. Depends if I end up getting a Lehman Russ instead.
If you get a Chimera, then Santa giving you a real hint to buck your ideas up, Sonny.
Yes. Work harder next year, Steve.
Absolutely. Very exciting. So I'm part of the Hobby Vices Discord, which is run by, you never guess it, Hobby Vices. He's got this little Secret Santa thing, this global Secret Santa, which is really cool. And it's called Ho Ho Hobby Vices, as in Ho 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 with Hobby Vices. Portmanteaued. Genius, that guy. And I received my parcel yesterday, which is very exciting. And like the enthusiastic child that I am, I didn't wait until Christmas. I opened it. So I do want to do a shout out to Mike, who is at MikePaints40k on Instagram, for the lovely Eldari.
Nice.
That he sent me. So what an absolute gentleman, which is great. I thought it very fitting that we're talking about that today, given that this is our Flashpoint episode, one of them, and we talked about creating an Eldari army for in the first one. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to be continuing on that and using some of the stuff that I've got from Mike via Secret Santa on Ho Ho Hobby Vices, and that's very exciting. Eldari, here we come.
Yeah, sounds very good.
Right, so that's that done. That's Christmas waffle aside. Right, so in this latest of the Flashpoint articles in White Dwarf, we have a deep dive into two aspects of the Argovan system. You've got the planet Hishreya, and we talked about armies based on Hishreya before, so this is actually really cool because it means that we revisit this planet in a bit of greater detail. And we also visit Feronica or Feronica, depending on who you ask. Oh, we've also had some bouncing around all over the shop today. However, we have had some responses to our Necron poll on how to pronounce the word that you describe the star gods as.
Satan?
Are you a Satan or Catan kind of guy?
I was a Satan, but I'm...
You were a Satan.
I might be wrong.
Well, currently, this is a 24-hour poll, and I only released it a few hours ago. It's 21 hours left with 73 votes. Currently, wow. Satan 20.5% and Catan 79.5%. Yeah, Catan it is. All but right. Also, I did put Catan, and lots of people were like, it doesn't have an R in it. It's not Catan, it's Catan. I think you'll find. I imagine they pushed their glasses up their nose and said, actually, when they typed that. But thank you for correcting my phonetic spelling. I apologize. In my mind, it's like Catan, very quickly. Curtan, not like Curtan.
Yeah. Get with the program, Dan.
Get with the program, guys. God, pronounce your made-up Xenos words properly. God.
Yes.
Anyway, yes. So the other second planet is Feronica or Feronica, depending on who you ask. Maybe we'll do a poll for that. Who knows? Who knows?
Just no stopping us now.
No stopping us. This is a non-stop 40K train of awesomeness. Right, let's go into the flashpoint. So, Steve, where are we at with the story? Talk to me about the story. What's happened?
So what we know is Hishreya is obviously an ice planet. We discovered that last time. Thermal vents lift up huge mountains, and on top of these mountains, we've got hives. We've got these Hishreya mountain men are fighting alongside the guard. But what we have discovered is that actually the fighting on Hishreya has been going really well, and actually they've been able to move quickly enough and shut down a lot of the tombs before they've got fully opened up and fully activated. And I think for me, this kind of feels like it started off as, spoiler alert, as that we were really going to actually be able to hold this planet. Because I think the reason we're here, just take a step back, the reason we're here is so much of the Nexus Peninsula is absolutely dead. There are nobody left surviving. So the fact that Task Force 11 that went in there with the job suddenly had these signals coming from the Argovan system suddenly meant, well, if there's some people there, then there's possibly chances of us taking these planets back, and then this system actually becoming like a beachhead, a place to then work out and fight deeper out into the Nexus. So yeah, and we start to learn a bit more about some of the characters that are leading it, don't we, Dan?
We do. And I think actually the character who leads the Hishrein component of Task Force 11, who is Admiral Archibald Tansk, I really liked her story. I thought it was very, very 40K. Yes. She basically did very well, all things considered. However, did withdraw, and because she withdrew, or it was seen as a defeat, she was executed.
Yeah, and
I just thought, like, that's so 40K that, like, this admiral's done an amazing job in the face of crazy odds and some a crazy, horrible Xenos threat, and the Imperium's like, nah, you ran away, killer.
Yeah. And I think what I really liked about it was that it was a bitter fight. Imperium were taking the lead, and then these tomb fleets just arrived, an overwhelming force that nobody could defeat. And our commander, she did a fighting retreat. A huge percentage of some of the hives were actually evacuated.
Yeah, she evacuated loads of the kind of civilian population, didn't she?
Yeah, and you'd look at that and you go, that there was no mistakes were made. It's war, and just making the right decisions is in front of you right now. Still that's not good enough. Still not good enough.
There were a couple of really cool bits on this which I really enjoyed. So obviously, being a fan of all things pointy of ear at this point,
yes,
this is a section here where it's what a great many either do not know, have forgotten, or even refuse to acknowledge, that was until the withdrawal, Tanks was winning the war for Hishreya. That is not to say that losses were not high, but it's clear that the Necrons had lost the initiative, if indeed they had it in the first place. And there was a tangible sense of solidarity between the Imperial forces involved that only grew stronger under Tanks' leadership, and especially as more victories were accrued. And then just before that as well, it does say, without Tanks' patience and cool assessment of the situation, not only would we have no idea that the Eldari were present at all in the Argovan system, the total losses suffered would have been, in my judgment, much higher as well. So not only is she militarily, doing very well, but also they've uncovered that the Eldari were present, which is quite interesting, because in the first kind of excerpts of this guy's book, because don't forget that this flashpoint is being, through the view of the definitive account for the War of the Piranha Nexus, written by myself, esteemed appointed historiator Alphus Rhetoric Smy. So, yeah, so he was kind of saying, like, people just didn't even believe that the Eldari were there on Hishreya. And now that he's mentioning it again, is that apparently it's kind of down to her that their presence was confirmed. Yeah. So I just like that because it was a reference to the Eldari. But yeah, it does seem to kind of suggest that before the Necrons brought in their massive reinforcements and she kind of couldn't do anything about it, that actually she was very militarily successful.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. I think we also get to see a little bit more of the local population. I was really interested in that one of the exports and one of the really important things they have is like hunting sea creatures for food. And there's like a whole fleet, which is like a clan in itself, that go hunting for these things. And it's just the names. I think last time we heard about mega shoals of Hecleopyroids, but this time we learn about Delphiniidae and blood walls.
Basically, and dolphins.
Well, yeah.
But Delphinidies.
Yeah.
Like 40K dolphins. What's not to like?
Exactly.
just for reference, that is not a sound effect. That was Steve making dolphin noises. Steve, you're a man of many talents, and dolphin noises I did not believe. Until now, I did not realize that your talents extended this far. Not even earthly dolphin noises, but I think that was a Delphinidae dialect that you spoke there.
It was from the Northern Ocean, so you might not have understood it if you're from the South. But I think for me, it's this colour that we get with the story, I think. And there's a nice little story in there about the fact that they kind of had almost heretical kind of beliefs about how the universe worked and who were godlike. But once they got converted, they actually became, you know, kind of even more pious, fighting for the emperor. So I think for me, I don't think they ever become militarized as such. They fight alongside, but I wonder what would be to model a crew, or, you know, if they almost go off world at some stage. So have some of those at starport somewhere. I don't know. What would they look like? And I don't feel that they're like, you know, gar pirates with hats with skulls on. You know,
it's almost like Waterworldy. Do you remember that film with Kevin Costner in it?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what a film! What an absolute belter of a film. But yeah, they were kind of the sort of the they call them the Ocean tribes, don't they?
Yes,
the Ocean clans, and loads of them are kind of these sort of seafaring people, almost like living on like floating hive cities, but maybe not that size. And that loads of the civilian populace like abandoned their sort of family homes so that they could repurpose these ships to be used as transport vehicles for Astra Militarum.
Yeah, fantastic.
So we kind of see a little bit about the kind of culture, and as you say, like what do these ships look like? You know, these kind of floating cities or sort of floating clan, almost like craft worlds, I guess, but you know, clearly not to that scale.
Yeah, yeah, whole communities existing on the water, and I think, yeah, and it'd be cool to have some smaller transport sort of skiffs or something like that that you could actually use in the game and enter the battlefield coming up the beach.
Yeah,
or getting onto an ice floe, because you know, remember we're
not like a beach, you know, like a Miami Beach kind of beach. It's more of a kind of frosty beach, isn't it? And before we go onto beaches, because that is one of the coolest bits about the Hishraean section of Flashpoint, I do want to give a big shout out to the Frostworms, because they are mentioned.
Yeah,
those not engaging in backbreaking works in the mines of Hishraea are, if anything, more vulnerable. To them falls the harrowing task of protecting the labourers from frostworms. These creatures, though small, move in tides of hundreds. They can bore through frozen rock and strip a person to the bone in seconds. They are truly frightful beasts, and though successive planetary governors have tried, purging them has proven not only impossible, but costly.
Yeah.
And then there's a little breakout, which is amazing! You ready for this?
Yeah, go for it.
The last attempt at one of these purges, right? The last attempt was made during the premiership of Lugafron Thrall the 12th. His tunnel has reached a nesting site successfully, but doing so was a critical error. It provoked a savage response. We now know that frostworms are viciously protective of their caverns in which they plant millions of eggs and at a time. The disgusting creatures follow the tunnels all the way back to Hive Oedon. It is thought that around 98% of the hive's population were killed and the entire city collapsed.
Wow.
I just love it. Like, don't kick the nest of bees.
No. I mean, hives have millions, if not billions, of people in them, don't they?
Yeah. And it's just got some like really, really grumpy frostworm hordes. Burrowing back down the tunnels. Like, right, okay, you're going to kick my nest. I'm going to come and kick in your nest.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So I did think here, actually, it would be quite cool to maybe imagine what Frostworms would be like if, like, how the Tyranids would interact with this planet.
Yeah.
So if, let's say, some Tyranid spores reached the surface and maybe infected Frostworms, or maybe the Tyranids were kind of looking to take advantage of the fauna of the planet, then maybe you'd have like a kind of tunneling force. So Morlocks, Trigons, Raveners, the Red Terror, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just thought that actually maybe a Tyranid burrowing force on ice bases with kind of really pale blue skin and dark blue chitin or something like that, or maybe grey or something like that, could look really sweet and be a nice little Hishrian force.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's obviously a huge amount of biomass within these caves and within these, even though these things are not very big in themselves, basically like 92% mouth, but they're small, but they will strip the flesh off you really, really quickly. So yeah, no, I think that combination would be very good. And we do get to see how they might play in the game, because we've got a couple of missions in this issue, haven't we?
We do. Yeah. Do you want to talk us through those?
Yeah. So there's one for Hishrea and one for Veronica. The Hishrea one is basically attack defense. But the cool thing is you get to summon Frostworms. So it's an action, and one unit from the attacker's army can start to perform the action at the end of their movement phase if it is in 1 inch of an objective marker. The action is completed at the end of the attacker's turn. If this action is successfully completed, replace the objective marker with a Frostworm marker. And then what happens is they get to move around.
I love it already.
And I think it's,
and the rule is called Voracious Maws.
Yeah.
Nam, yeah. Nam, nam, nams.
And they're just so cool. And they're nasty too. So if at the end of the battle round, the attacker rolls one dice for each Frostworm mark on the battlefield, adding one to the result for each counter on that marker. On a 4+, every unit within 6 inches suffers D6 mortal wounds, but it's then removed. So basically they have fallen and they disappear. So if you roll a 1 to 3, you place a counter on that Frostworm marker, because you could end up with this really, really, really hungry.
Yeah, and you can imagine them kind of like picking up more Frostworms as they go, like a snowball rolling down a hill.
Yeah, yeah.
So you roll off with it. So at the start of the battle round, starting with the attacker, players alternate selecting a Frostworm marker until each marker has been selected once. After each selection, players roll off. The winner can then move a number of inches equal to their roll. And then at the end of the battle round, you do what you said,
yeah,
which is rolling a D6. D6 mortal wounds is a lot.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
You imagine one of those just rolling a 6 and just munching one of your heroes.
Yeah.
You'd be fuming, wouldn't you? What happened to your apothecary? Oh, he got frostwormed.
Yeah, yeah, he's that smudge in the snow over there. So I think for me that's kind of a great example of how it kind of goes from story to game to rules and how that can work. And yeah, and absolutely, I'd want to try and model my Frostworm markers.
So Commissar Yarrick, one of the most expensive HQs in the Imperial Guard, or the Astra Militarum rather, Codex, has got 4 wounds.
Oof, 50% chance.
Yeah, and obviously he's got his iron will, so on a roll of D6 every time Commissar Yarrick loses his final wound on a roll of 3+, that wound is not lost. But still, imagine just getting munched by some Frostworms.
Yeah.
What happened to Lord Castellan Creed? Four-wound model, he got munched.
Yeah, they're not just annoying, they're dangerous. They're really dangerous.
Where's Colonel Ironhand Strachan? Oh, yeah, 5 wounds. He got munched. Although I reckon if anyone's going to, you know, win a fight with some Frostworm swarms, it's going to be a Catachan model.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
He'd shotgun them to death. There we go. So, yeah, and you can do, the attacker scores 20 victory points every time a Frostworm marker is removed. The attacker scores 10 victory points for each Frostworm marker on the battlefield at the end of the battle. The defender scores 20 victory points at the end of the game for every objective marker that's still on the battlefield. And each player scores 10 victory points for each objective marker they control at the end of the battle.
So it's kind of a balance, isn't it? Do you convert the objective markers with Frostworms? And then, I mean, getting rid of the Frostworm, basically you just need to get it into a fight and hope to roll 1 to 3. No, rolled 4+.
Yeah, so 1 to 3 adds a counter to it.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Which just means you're then on a three up because it's a four up adding, but you add one for every counter that's on it. But the counters don't make the damage any better. It just means it's more likely to happen afterwards the next turn.
Yes. So, how do you get rid of them? You feed them, I guess, is the only way to get rid of them.
Munch, munch, munch. And then you've got a defender stratagem, which is one CP, which allows you to reroll the Frostworm roll off.
Yeah.
And the attacker has a... one CP stratagem, which allows you to select one unit from your army, excluding aircraft, and make a normal or advanced move with that unit. That unit cannot finish its move within 9 inches of enemy units, which is amazing because you could like sneak into position closer to the objectives and turn more into Frostworms. I think you just turn as many objectives into Frostworms as possible and just watch your opponent's army get absolutely munched.
Yeah.
And you could then model these, because what are objectives on 40 mil bases these days?
Yeah.
So you could just put some Rippers on, get some Ripper Swarms.
Yeah.
Ooh, do you remember those Forge World Ripper Swarms? The ones that were kind of all climbing over each other?
Yeah.
Those would look cool as Frostworm bases, wouldn't they?
They would. They're like a little tide, if nothing.
Yeah, exactly. An endless tide of snowy munch worms. And if that's not hell, then I don't know what is. Right, before we go on to the next planet, which is Veronica, then let's talk about the beach scene. So basically, there's this kind of... Oh, what is it? I guess it's like D-Day landings, but in 40K and on ice. So
yes.
40K on ice. That's like an ice skating musical version of 40K, which to be fair, sounds pretty legit. Don't get me wrong.
So 40K on ice Christmas panto.
Yes. Amazing. GW, oh, yes, it is. They're like, where are the Frostworms?
They're behind you.
Oh. GW, you need to send us our commission for this idea because it's going to be amazing. You can forget all your arty black and white animated series. Yeah, get rid of that nonsense. You need an ice skating pantomime musical based on his rare
Stephen Dan in sequins.
Yeah, I think you'd make a pretty good dame.
Save that for later, Dan, please.
That's on the... subscribe to our OnlyFans. Right, so there's this really cool scene. Basically, they've got all these kind of... all these boats and ships from various different sources. There's all these different landing craft. And the aircraft go in first, and they can't find any. They don't find much resistance. And they're expecting all these defences. There's nothing there. And it's kind of like that, oh, it's quiet. Almost too quiet. And obviously they land and, you know, all this stuff comes up and all the Necron defenses like come up from underground and just absolutely destroy everything. And it's really cool. And I did enjoy a little snapshot in one of the stories, which was about an Astra Militarum trooper who kind of gets attacked by burrowing wraiths or something like that. And I just thought it was, she's just like running around, like firing her lasgun at these wraiths. And they're just obviously going to absolutely rinse the whole platoon or whatever. But I just thought it was pretty, you know, you could just imagine being a baseline human, just like running onto a beach and getting attacked by green lightning and wraiths.
Yeah.
Be horrible. Yeah. So did think maybe think of maybe doing some conversions with the Skitarii transport thing, you know, the hovercraft thing.
Yeah.
That would be really cool. And I did see someone make an amazing, it was either, I think it might have actually been a Photoshopped jobby where they converted it into like a Krieg landing ship.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think that would look really cool if you put Astra Militarum dudes on the front, you know, in the turrets or whatever, and put some different weapons on it so it wasn't as admechy. I think that would be quite cool for a little 25 power. You know, this is my Hishrin landing force.
Yeah.
You could have some aircraft with it.
Well,
I say some aircraft. You're looking at 25 power, so probably one aircraft. You could have a Valkyrie with some Tempest of Scions in it to be the airborne insertion. And then maybe have some, you could either have like Astra Militarum regiments in there, or you could even have the kind of Hishrin irregulars, like the, you know, the Hishrin mountain men that we discussed before.
So yeah, we learn a bit more about the military structure of the native Hishrian troop.
Well, we do, don't we? We've got the mountain men from last time, and we've got all sorts of amazingly sounding regiments.
Yeah.
Which I think every single time I read one, I was just like, oh, what would they look like? Oh, maybe I could do those. And it was just that tiny little snippet was enough to get me excited.
Yeah, exactly. So a local defense unit we've got down here is Flow Striders.
The Flow Striders.
I guess that's ice flow.
Wasn't there a rapper called Flo Rida?
Ooh, so he'd have to be the commander then, would he?
He would be.
So we've also got Harpoonist So they're a military regiment, an armored regiment are called the Avalanchers. Nice. That's a good one. I like that one. And then we've got a artillery regiment, which are called the Powder Men. So I think.
Yeah, love it.
That's a codex right there, please, Games Workshop.
The Hishrian Powdermen codex supplement.
Well, no, I was thinking all of them, but yeah. But in the same way we're getting, you know, Space Marine chapter specific sub-books, then a little Hishrian one would be just nice. And a model range, of course.
Obviously. Plastic Hishrian Mountain Men kit.
Yes. It's going to be a storm. In this house, at least.
Yeah, you've got one buyer, right, yeah. Already. Steve Foot.
I buy one of everything.
Well, in that case, it's a worthwhile investment then. Right, so we've covered Hishrea, which I will be continuing my Craft Worlds. Also, I should say I'll be continuing my Eldari list, because I do want to potentially include some other elements.
Yeah.
Mysterious face. Tell me about Feronica, and then maybe we'll talk about your army and then my army.
So I think Feronica's interesting in that we kind of knew stuff was going on there. So it's been a source of Noctilus for a long time. So the Adeptus Mechanicus have got lots of installations on this planet, and they've got mines and they've got processing. So it kind of becomes a big priority, because we know that the Necrons are using Blackstone, Noctilith, same stuff. They're using that as all part of their master plan for the stilling. And so to be able to capture this planet and own this resource, and also to understand it more. I think that's the other thing, is to be able to defeat the Necron weaponry, we need to understand how they're using it. So I think for me, this is where this planet becomes hugely strategic within the whole system.
Yeah, it's like this kind of industrial mega complex, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which I did think was cool, just kind of reading about it. But it's also very, samey's the wrong word, and I don't mean this as a criticism, but there's a lot of kind of heavily industrialized cities in 40K already. So it didn't necessarily really resound with me in a particular way, because it was just like, here's something that's quite similar to stuff you already know about. Whereas with Hishrea, it feels much more unique.
Yes. I think it's nice to have the mix. And I think we do know that this is going to be important. But I think what's quite nice about this is, you know, the Necrons want this place just as badly. And actually, there's some quite good descriptions of sieges, where you have really important outposts, Mechanicus installations. So for me, that sounds like really good fun for a game. And it's about, you know, relieving a place under siege.
Yeah. And were there any kind of factions there that, because we've just covered the Hishrean Mountain Men, were there any factions there that you liked the sound of?
Not as much. I suppose for me, I quite like the idea of gaming this where perhaps the Imperium side has Mechanicus forces with them, but they don't actually trust them. And that maybe Mechanicus forces would actually tell everyone to go over there because that's the way in, but it really isn't. They'll disappear somewhere else. So, you know, it wouldn't be the first time my army fought itself, but I think for me, it would make it a really fun game. So if you know, agreed with the opponent that perhaps I've got more, because actually it's not going to be coordinated, and, you know, the other player's got to work out which way the Mechanicus are going to go, because actually that's where because maybe even the Necrons don't even know where the secret stash is or where the latest data banks are. I think for me, that was the thing I quite found quite interesting about this part of the campaign.
Yeah. So where did that leave you in terms of your list? Because your first 25 power was very much a Hishrean list, wasn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, I was tempted to kind of expand on that, but I have to admit my Talan head got turned when I read that Veronica, apart from 9 regiments of Talan Desert Raiders, which we all know, there was 9 infiltration battalions of Talan Mole Rats.
Ooh, what's a Talan Mole Rat, Steve?
Well, we don't know, so that means I can make it up. Which is,
you can make it up. That's perfect. Sounds right up your Talan alley.
Yes,
Talan,
right up my woody.
Tunnel, which is season 2 of Steve's OnlyFans, by the way.
Oh, dear. How much do you think we'll make down? Anyway, sorry, no, moving on. So I think for me, it was, obviously we do know that the Talan had to survive underground, obviously, when their home world was attacked. So, you know, compared to the kind of desert warriors that we kind of know and love, of the Rough Riders and the Wind in Your Hair, Desert Winds and all that, the idea of actually having them kind of coming up from underground was kind of like, ooh, a different twist. But also fits my army's idea of being this very much a kind of strike force deep behind enemy lines, and to be able to suddenly appear as breaching teams, it was like, oh, wonder what that could look like. So set ourselves the challenge of the 25 power level. So went straight in with two breaching drills, which are the Forge World models. I'm using the nice shiny new Forge World rules. And they allow you to bring with each one either a veteran squad or an engineer, combat engineer squad. So these,
which is a Krieg only unit. Yeah. And so this is actually quite an interesting point to point out here, is that this unit used to be a breaching drill with veterans. So it used to be kind of one unit that came with a transport and a unit, whereas now they split it out as a transport only.
Yes, which makes it much more practical.
Well, it also gives you the flexibility to arm your veterans however you want, rather than just use the veteran unit that they gave you.
Yes.
Which obviously did have some flexibility in it, but yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So with the new rules are slightly different in that you no longer get the short range melter that we kind of had in the past, which is a shame. But the flip side is it's hell at whacking. So it's using its melter cutting drill, but it's in melee only. So it gets D3 plus 3 attacks, which is nice. Strength times 2, which is normal strength is 6, so that's strength 12. AP minus 4, damage 3. But each time an attack made with this weapon targets a vehicle, the attack has a damage characteristic of 6.
Tasty. And how many attacks do you get to do with it?
D3 plus 3 still.
Nice.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a delivery system, really. But again, I think, so my idea with these is that they would, they pop up, grab an objective, or they pop up and destroy artillery. So they're going to kind of bunch up. So my list works like this. I have kind of cheated. And obviously I would need to agree with this with my opponent, but I thought we should have a platoon leader with each squad. I don't necessarily see this as being too broken. So the platoon leader for each, we've got the Alpha squad and the Papa squad. The Alpha squad is going to be that will come up, and they're the long reaching ones, or they're the ones that are going to destroy the vehicle. So we've got Sarge with the bolt gun and chainsaw, just to be heroic. We've got a heavy weapon team, which is a missile launcher, 3 melter, because melter, and everybody else with Laz and Vox. And they're led by a platoon commander, and he's got a bolt gun and power sword, again, to stir everybody on. Now,
just as Steve says, just for the record, this is a narrative quirk that Steve's inserting here, because he wants to have some officers leading these veterans, because the subterranean assault rule says during deployment you can set up this unit underground instead of setting up on the battlefield. If you do, you can set up one regiment veterans or one regiment combat engineer squad underground with it during a reinforcement step of your movement phase, blah, 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 9 inches away. So there are no provisions for adding any extra units, platoon commanders or otherwise, to these Hades Breaches drill in match play. This is just something that we're kind of exploring just for the theme of this army.
Yes.
Which I think is well within the spirit of Crusade.
Yes, I'd hope so. I mean, if someone can write in or message us to say, I've done some accidental filth and found something dirty, then please do. But I mean, for 25 power level, I've got 2 squads, 2 drills, 2 platoon leaders. I mean, I'm not sure that I'm very mobile for grabbing objectives or, you know, getting all of the secondaries and all that stuff. So it would very much based on a narrative game and idea.
Although you do get to use orders from your platoon commander, which are quite tasty.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the point they're going there, aren't they? To order the troops. But we thought we'd mention it now just because obviously there are some people that play in very match play focused environments that might be doing Crusade games, but with a kind of match play structure. And this doesn't necessarily fit in with that. And you may need to discuss with your opponents if you're tweaking the rules like Steve and I, well, especially Steve, like to do.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I know I play at one edge of the types of games. And but yeah, I mean, if I met someone and they said I'd like to play that army, but I don't really want, you know, it's got to be legal, then I would just tweak it and do something else. It's fine. But I guess I always start with kind of like what I think is cool. So the Papa Squad, these are basically the sort of breach defense unit. So these are the guys who are going to circle round. They're going to ones that are going to kind of defend Alpha Squad, who obviously got the longer reach and got all the melter. So we got Sarge with bolt gun and chainsword. We've got a heavy flamer. And then we've got two extra flamers, one plasma, rocks, and las guns. So they're led by a platoon commander, Power Fist. So, you know, they're not going to really fight anything. But I think if you want to charge them, and I've got some CP left over. So one of the things for me is that I'm thinking if I'm using these and they can get experience and they can get a battle trait to give Papa Squad, this breach defense team, cool headed would mean they then overwatch on fives. Now, obviously the flamers are going to auto hit anyway, but you know, it's just another little nudge that makes them that little bit cooler. Now that did leave me with some points left for my 25. So I thought I'd go for a special weapons squad. And in this case, I would make them all snipers. And so they wouldn't be coming up with the drills. They'd be kind of overwatching the battlefield. Their role would be obviously to take out any commanders that reveal themselves, but also just to coordinate probably back to, you know, battalion. So kind of observation and snipers, if that makes sense. One of the things I'd look to use the stratagem experienced eye as 1 CP, and this comes from the Greek to Good book, and that allows you to give veterans one better AP, which is always nice.
They would be going on what, the flamers?
Yeah, I mean, it was whoever's in the most trouble, I guess, they'd get the experience.
Because I think right, if you're putting an additional bit of AP on melters, I don't know, yes. Like what's melter not getting through?
Yeah, true. Absolutely. Yeah. So that would be saved for Papa Squad breach defense one. And then just again, just looking, how do I bring these guys to life using Crusade? So I'd probably, agendas wise, I'd probably look at Breakthrough. And that's, you get the ability for up to 3 units, finish the game within 6 inches of the enemy board edge. So that could be quite easy if I'm chasing artillery or something like that. And they get 2 extra experience per unit, up to 3 units. So again, that's a really good way of getting to those traits quicker and being able to, you know, spend your requisition points on that. So again, it's a little bit daft in that it's kind of a one-shot pony, but hopefully my ideas around it would make them do what I want them to do, which is pop up, grab something, destroy it, and then wait, hopefully, for the rest of the regiment to roll up over the dunes and, you know, take out what's left. So yeah. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I quite like it. I really like the idea of tunnel armies. It's something that I've considered doing, almost like a full tunneling army with those Hades breaching drills that you're looking at using, but also the AdMech, the Terax drill that you can get from Forge World.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can give those to either the Terax Pattern Termite Assault drill, it's called. And I believe you can give it to Space Marines or AdMech. Or certainly you could in the old world. Let me just double check the Forge World book. Yep, absolutely. So it's featured on page 31 under Forces of the Adeptus Astartes as the Terax Pattern Termite. And it's also featured on page 95 as the Terax Pattern Termite in the Adeptus Mechanicus data sheets. So yeah, it can be taken for both. And it, obviously, this is very much a kind of a narrative idea. You could have some Astra Militarum in their Hades Breaching Drills. You could have some Space Marines in their Terax Termites. And then you could also have some AdMech in your Terax Termites and just have this like uber tunneling force. Loads of close range weapons like flamers and plasmas. Maybe some, you know, vets with shotguns jumping out of the Hades Breaching Drill Squadron. You know, maybe using things like the... can you still get the Cadian Hostile? Smashing it into this Forge World search now. No, you can't. But, you know, the Cadian Hostile Environment suits with the gas masks. They were really sense. Cool.
Yeah.
And I think they had shotguns of those. It's just this kind of concept in my mind. It's not something I'm going to do ever, but yeah, it's cool. I like it.
Yeah. Right, cool. So how did you tackle this with your new 25 power level then, Dan?
Right. Well, I kind of had to go back to the drawing board on this one because actually I realized I made a mistake in my initial army list that we wrote kind of together on the previous episode, because I had actually used the points for the Shadow Spectres, the old points, which are 4 power level, not 5 power level in the recent update, despite the fact that we had that book in our hands when we were talking about it. So actually, I kind of rewrote my initial list. It's very similar, but I just kind of tweaked it slightly to fit within the 25 power because it was over. So just to kind of, let's do that first, and then we'll move on to why and how I changed it. So sure. We had Illich Nightspear. He was a sort of a core part of the list. And then I had a Warlock Conclave with 3 Warlocks in it. I think I might have just had 1 or something before. But so, yeah, I had Illich Nightspear with 3 Warlocks. And then I had 2 units of 5 Rangers, because this is going to be a Lytok Craft World force.
Yep.
So I thought it would be thematic to stick those Rangers in. And then I had 2 units of Swooping Hawks. So I'm not going to take the Shadow Spectres anymore. So I'm just going to have Illich Nightspear, 3 Warlocks, 2x5 Rangers, and then 2x5 Swooping Hawks. And the idea is that this is a quite a nice, fast, light army. I wanted no vehicles in there because of the rules that damaged vehicles in Hishrir, the snowstorms or whatever it was. And so that was that. And so building on that, I did come up with 2 ideas. And I'll talk about the first one that I didn't go for just first. So initially just adding a Farseer to it to lead those Warlocks. So he's 6 power.
Yeah.
And then cool. I was inspired by something that was in the White Dwarf, which I should read now. So this is a sidebar, a footnote, but basically it comes off talking about how the harsh environment of Hishrir was, you know, very harsh. Fighting on Hishrir was no less arduous than on any other planet in the system. Indeed, thanks to the conditions, it was arguably worse. And then there's a footnote that says, casualty reports I've consulted suggest that on average, a third of casualties suffered were due to extreme weather events or the climate in general. The 19th Athonian Tunnel Rats, so another tunneling army, the 19th Athonian Tunnel Rats, ordered to explore the Midthadian ice caves, suffered an extraordinary 80% casualties due to geographically related reasons. They encountered no enemies whatsoever, despite the reports of strange, lithe, laughing beings that had inspired the full exploration. So I thought that was very Harlequin-y.
Yeah.
And I thought, actually, how cool would it be to have the rest of my power level as Harlequins? So this wasn't what I went for in the end, but I just thought it was cool. So I'll just do a quick shout out for this list, which is, so I had a Farseer to bolster the rest of it, and then I had a Troopmaster who would lead a troop of 5 Harlequins, and then throw a Death Jester and a Solitaire. And the idea was that, you know, the Death Jester would inspire spooky, you know, morale-based casualties. The Solitaire would flicker in and out, kind of on theme with what I was doing, and of course the troop master would lead the troop to laugh at them and cut them down, which I thought was really cool and would allow me to use different models. But as it was, I did want to use some of the models that I was very kindly sent by Mike for Secret Santa. So I stuck with this Farseer because I did want someone to lead those Warlocks. And then I wanted to use the Wraithguard that Mike kindly sent me and the Spirit Seer. So it's a Farseer, Spirit Seer, Wraithguard, and then a unit of Shining Spears. And I thought that the Shining Spears would be on theme with the kind of fast and light. And whilst, you know, jet bike is, you know, is I guess the heaviest duty bit of kit that's in there up until now, I still thought it fitted with the kind of light reconnaissance force type thing. And I like the idea of Shining Spears rather than the Windrider jet bikes, just because they're a little bit more kind of take the fight to the enemy. They can hunt them down with their pointy spears.
Yeah.
And then I wanted something that had a bit of punch as well. I didn't just want this to be a very kind of glass cannon list. I wanted something a bit more durable. So I put Spirit Seer with 5 Wraithguard in there. And those are 10 power for Wraithguard. They're pretty chunky, but the Spirit Seer helps kind of keep the damage output higher, because he allows them to, I think it's reroll 1s or something.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So you got that good, it's kind of a good sort of base of fire, haven't you, from there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So Spirit Mark, you can reroll hit rolls of 1 for friendly Spirit Host units, attacks against enemy units that are within 6 inch of the Spirit Seer. So the Spirit Seer would get stuck in with the kind of Warlocks and the Farseer. And meanwhile, the Wraith Guard would pew-pew from the side. Or I could even make them Wraith Blades as well, because they're the same power, and maybe they could go chop things up.
Yeah. What weapons would you have them with?
I think I would go for the D-Cannons, just because that's traditional. The Wraith Cannon. I'm literally conveyed. It's D Scythe or Wraith Cannon. And I said D Cannon. So well done me. Both of them at once.
A combi weapon.
A D-cannon is a different weapon that is mounted on a support weapon platform, which we all know. So I would make, I would arm them with the Wraith cannon because it's traditional. I actually always wanted Wraith Guard when I was younger, when I was a wee lad, but they were too expensive because they were like £5 for one model in a blister or whatever. And I was like, oh, no way. My whole pocket money on one model, no way. So I bought, you know, £5 for one blister of three Fire Dragons instead. But yeah, so now they've got these amazing plastic Wraith Guard models. I definitely want to be using those. Yeah. And yeah, the Wraith Cannons are traditionally what they've got. I did like the D-Scythe Flamers, but they automatically hit their target. So there's no point in then having a Spirit Seer because they didn't do reroll once to hit. So it would definitely be the Wraith Cannon.
You've thought this through, haven't you, Dan?
No, I haven't thought that through. I literally read it just there. So that's that's not any pre-thought. A full disclosure, that is not planned, intentional. That's just a coincidence. Right, so I also wanted to use some of the rules out of Phoenix Arising. So whilst I am running these as a light arc, I did review the craft world attributes to kind of the DIY craft worlds. Yeah. And I did quite like both the Masterful Shots and the Masters of Concealment combo. And I thought that kind of worked quite well.
Okay, explain how they work.
So Master's Concealment was when resolving an attack made with a ranged weapon against a unit with this attribute by a model that's more than 12 inches away, that unit is treated as having the benefit of cover.
Okay.
To its saving throw. So that's fine. They're just in cover normal if they're 12 inches away, but my rangers get add 2 to their cover, you know, their save rather than add 1 for cover. So it means that even if they're out in the open, as long as they're far away, they're still in cover and they're still getting +2, not +1.
Nice.
So I thought that made my rangers a bit more resilient. And Masterful Shots, when resolving an attack made by a model with this attribute, the target does not receive the benefit of cover to its saving throw. So I kind of thought it was a nice balance of like, I get cover even though where there is no cover, and when my opponent's in cover, they're not getting it.
Yeah.
So I kind of just thought that it was a cool way to not have to be fixed by the terrain placement for me, and to negate the benefit of my opponent's terrain placement, which I thought thematically worked really well for a light on its feet raiding Eldari force who would appear out of nowhere. I know I said something very similar to my Necrons. I've obviously got something on, you know, obviously like a thematic trend, which is kind of ambushy forces. Because I swear I said something similar for my Wraith. So it'd appear out of nowhere and eat things, you know, in my Necron episode.
But I think it also fits the story well. I mean, the fact that very few people to begin with could confirm that they were there at all. So that means some people died because obviously they couldn't tell anyone. And then the ones that got away couldn't see you anyway, because even though you were stood in the open, you were in cover and they couldn't see. So I think for me, that works really well in that whole idea of, you know, you can't see them, you're shot, and you didn't see who shot you.
Yeah, I definitely think it's kind of thematic. I like it. Like nice. It a lot. And then I also looked at some of the Exarch powers as well. We have got Swooping Hawks in this army. We've got two units of Swooping Hawks, and I thought a cool Exarch power to use would be Suppressing Fire. So when a Swooping Hawk fires Overwatch at the enemy units, subtract 2 from charge rolls made for that unit until the end of the phase. So I thought it was quite a cool way, because Overwatch you now have to pay a CP for. So if you're going to use Overwatch, you might as well make it more beneficial. So yep. It means that CP is not just allowing you to fire your weapons at a target, because also you don't need to hit them. It just says when they fire. Yeah. It also makes enemy units harder to make that charge successful, which means that I can use my Swooping Hawks perhaps as a screen to block out parts of the board, and opponents will have to kind of go through them to get to maybe the tasty center that is my rangers, you know, on the objectives or something.
Yeah, it just says it again. I mean, for me, it's that whole kind of thing. You know, we thought we saw them, we tried to charge them, by the time we got there, they were gone.
Yeah, no, I like that. That is really cool.
Yeah, no, really thematic and practical too.
Yeah, exactly. Good in game. And then I did think about potentially using the intercept rule as well for another one. So when this unit, whilst this unit contains a Swooping Hawk Exarch, when resolving an attack made by a model in this unit against an enemy unit that can fly, you can reroll hits. So in Hishreya, models that can't fly are penalized by the weather. However, models that can fly aren't. So I just thought, oh, if other people are taking like kind of Hishrean themed armies and therefore doing what I've done, which is taken lots of units that can fly, I want to be better at killing them. So Intercept is potentially another choice there, but I would probably just do both with suppressing fire, so it doesn't matter where, you know, they both do the same thing regardless of where they are.
Yeah, sure.
So that's that. And then moving on to the Shining Spears, I definitely thought that Blade Master was a really cool thing to use. So a Paragon Saber is usually strength user, AP 4, damage 1, and you can reroll failed hit and wounds. Whereas if you give the Shining Spear X-Arch the Blade Master power, the Paragon Saber in this unit's X-Arch, that this unit's X-Arch is equipped with, has a damage characteristic of 3. So rerolling hits and wounds with 3 attacks, you're potentially doing 9 damage. Although you obviously that's weapon skill 3, so that's decent, but strength 3, and it's strength user.
Okay. What's the AP?
4.
Wow, okay. So yeah, you just cherry pick your targets, don't you?
Well, yes, but as long as it's not too high toughness.
Yeah.
But you can reroll your wounds, yeah. So it does make a... and you could reroll wounds for Shining Spear X-Arch when attacking a monster or vehicle with any weapon, just because that's the expert hunter rules. But also the Paragon Saber allows you to inherently reroll wounds against anything, so that's kind of irrelevant there.
Yeah. No, it's nice. Good list. Good fun.
Yeah, so that's relevant if you're taking a Star Lance, but it's not relevant because I'll be taking a Paragon Saber.
Yes. Yes. I haven't seen those models in a very long time. They're cool.
No, and actually this is something that I was thinking about, that they are cool models, however, they are older sculpts and are either metal and expensive or fine cast and also expensive. I thought of potentially buying a box of Dark Elder Scourges and kit bashing them with the Shadow Spectres that I've got.
Yeah.
And then somehow finding some kind of plasma, some sort of Laz Talon, Hawk's Talon, Laz Blastery type weapons. So yeah, so I'm not sure how I'm going to do it, but I did think of maybe kind of kit bashing them with some of the kits that I've got. So I've got some of the Shadow Spectres and I would just need to buy a box of Scourges. And also that gives me a bunch of other weapons to use, especially if I'm going to go down, maybe sort of have some Exodite allies. I could then maybe use some of those Dark Eldery bits to flesh that out.
Yeah, sweet.
So there we go. So that's my army. So, and I just think it's actually cool because we made this army up on the fly just because we were like, how would we fit this? And now I'm actually going to do the army over Christmas. So that's going to be my Christmas project, is build at least 25 power of this army.
I'm in the negotiations and looking to add probably at least one of the breaching teams to my main Talar. So I think they're a really good set of narrative, story-led campaign rules. And that's just 2 out of the 3. We don't know how many they'll go for. I've not seen the third one yet. But the nice thing is that Flashpoint, you know, can pop up and be any fight anywhere in the universe. So whether we get one every issue or whether we get them in batches, I don't know. But yeah, or maybe we'd get an annual. Maybe get a Flashpoint annual.
That'd be cool. At the end of next year.
Yeah.
Combining all the rules.
Yeah. Yes.
That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is great. They're in the magazine because it's content, you know, a whole load of gaming content that's really practical for what we want to do. So,
yeah, absolutely. Right. So, there we have it. That is our kind of impressions of part 2 of the Flashpoint Argoven System rules in White Dwarf. And we will be releasing another episode next week where we cover part 3. And who knows, maybe there'll be another 25 power of Eldari. Or maybe I'll do another 25 power list on the side. The problem with doing a different army that isn't Eldari is that I'll then be like, oh, this is quite interesting as well.
What, too so, many army army
too many armies. I know. What a novel problem to have that I have no way of relating to whatsoever. Right, Steve, let's talk about social media very briefly. So you can find the podcast at AOTI40K on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. You can also send us a voice message if you go to anchor.fm/AOTI. And of course, you can send us an email if you'd like, which is ashesoftheimperium@gmail.com.
You can get me on Twitter, and I'm at TinRacerSteve.
And I am at DangerMouse425 on Twitter. So all that remains is to wish you all happy hobbying and keep calm and crusade on.
Cheers, guys.